Then he said this, and then she got off with him, and then his ex did that. You'd think people would be wary of spilling to a writer. You'd think they'd know that we're essentially birds of carrion, picking over the corpses of dead affairs and forgotten arguments to recycle them in our work. Zombie reincarnations of their former selves, stitched into a macabre new patchwork of our own devising. Tom, if anyone, should have known that. But it didn't stop him. He was speaking now, his voice a bored drawl that didn't disguise the fact that he was clearly still angry with his husband.
What you've got to understand is that Bruce gave James his first big chance. He directed him in Black Ties, White Lies back in... God, what? We must be talking 7, 8 years ago. And maybe... I mean, I don't know. I never asked what went on, but Bruce wasn't exactly renowned for his professional chastity. We weren't together then, of course. But naturally, Bruce feels that James owes him a certain amount, and maybe equally naturally, James feels that he doesn't. I know that Bruce was pretty angry over the business with Coriolanus and the fact that Eamon sided with James, and then when those rumours got round about him and Richard, well, there was only one place those could have come from. Bruce swore he never sent that text to Clive.
He carried on a stream of names and places that meant nothing to me, and plays that had left only the sketchiest impression on my own cultural landscape. The politics flowed over me, but the point was clear. Bruce was angry with James and had a past with him, of whatever kind. Bruce had not wanted Tom to come to this hen night. Tom had come.
"So, anyway, fuck him,"
Tom said at last, dismissively. I wasn't sure if he was talking about Bruce or James. He walked across to the sideboard where a cluster of bottles stood. Gin, vodka, the pathetic remnants of last night's tequila.
"Want a drink? G&T?"
"No, thanks. Well, maybe just a tonic water." Tom nodded, went out for ice and limes, and then came back with 2 glasses.
"Bottoms up," he said,
his face set in lines that made him look a good 10 years older.
I took a sip and coughed.
Tonic there was, but also gin. I could have made a fuss, but Tom raised one eyebrow with such perfect comic timing that I could only laugh and swallow.
"So, tell me,"
he said as he drained his own glass and went back for a refill,
"what happened with you and James? What was last night about?"
I didn't answer at first. I took another long sip of my drink, swallowing it slowly, thinking about what to say. My instinct was to shrug it off with a laugh, but he would get it out of Claire or Nina later. Better to be honest. "James is... was..." I swirled the drink in my glass, the ice cubes chinking as I tried to think how to phrase it. "My ex," I said at last. It was true, but so far from the whole truth that it felt almost like a lie. "We were together at school."
"At school?"
Tom raised both eyebrows this time.
"Good Lord! Dark ages. Childhood sweethearts."
"Yes, I guess so."
"But you're friends now."
What could I say? No, I haven't seen him since the day he texted me. No, I've never forgiven him for what he said, what he did.
No.
I... not exactly. We sort of lost touch. There was a sudden silence, broken only by the sounds of Claire and Flo chatting next door and the hiss of a shower upstairs. Nina must have given up on trying to phone Jess.
"So you met at school?"
Tom asked. "Sort of. We were in a play together," I said slowly. It was strange to be talking about this. You don't bring it up much as an adult, how you got your heart broken for the first time. But Tom was the next best thing to an anonymous stranger. I was highly unlikely to meet him again after this weekend, and somehow telling him felt like a release. "Cat on a hot tin roof. I was Maggie, and James was Brick." "Ironic, really."
"Why ironic?"
Tom said, puzzled. But I couldn't answer. I was thinking of Maggie's words in the last act of the play, about making the lie true. But I knew that, of all people, Tom would know what that meant if I quoted the line. He would know what Maggie was referring to. Instead, I swallowed and said, "Just ironic."
"Come on,"
he said and smiled, his tanned cheek crinkling.
"You must have meant something."
I sighed. I wasn't going to tell him the truth, or not the truth I'd been thinking of. A different truth, then.
"Well, I was supposed to be the understudy. Claire was cast as Maggie. She was the lead in almost every play we ever did, right from primary school onwards."
"So what happened?"
"She got glandular fever. Missed a whole term of school. And I got pushed on stage."
I was always the understudy. I had a good verbal memory and I was conscientious. I felt Tom looking at me, puzzled about where the irony in that lay.
"Ironic that she should have been the one to get together with him, and now she is? Is that what you mean?"
"No, not exactly. It's more just ironic, given that I hate being looked at, being watched. And there I was in the main role. Maybe all writers prefer being behind the page to being on stage. What do you think?" Tom didn't answer. He only turned to look out of the great glass window, out into the forest. And I knew he was thinking of his remark the night before, of the stage, the audience, the watchers in the night. After a moment, I followed his gaze. It looked different to last night. Someone had switched on the external security lights, and you could see the blank white lawn stretched out, the perfect unbroken snowy carpet, and the sentinel trees, their trunks bare and prickly beneath the canopy. It should have made me feel better that you could see the blank, unspoiled canvas, visual evidence that we were alone, that whoever had disturbed the snow before had not come back. But somehow it was not reassuring. It made it feel even more stage-like, like the floodlights that illuminate the stage and cast the audience into a black morass beyond its golden pool, unseen watchers in the darkness. For a moment, I made myself shiver, imagining the myriad eyes of the night, foxes with their eyes glowing yellow in the lamplight, white-winged owls, frightened shrews. But the footsteps of this morning had not been animal. They had been very, very human.
"It stopped snowing," Tom said unnecessarily. "I must admit I'm quite glad. I didn't really fancy being snowed in here for days on end."
"Snowed in?" I said. "In November? Do you think that could really happen?"
"Oh, yes."
Flo's voice came from behind us, making me jump. She was carrying a tray of crisps and nuts and clamped her tongue rather sweetly between her teeth as she set it carefully down on the table.
"Happens all the time in January. It's one of the reasons my aunt doesn't really live here in the winter. The lane is impassable if you get a big dump. But it never snows as heavily in November, and I don't think it'll happen today. There's no more forecast for tonight. And it looks pretty, doesn't it?"
She straightened up, rubbing her back, and we all stared out of the window at the black, lowering trees and the white snow. It didn't look pretty. It looked stark and unforgiving. But I didn't say that. Instead, I asked the question that had been nagging at me.
"Flo, I meant to ask, the footprints going out to the garage this morning, was that you?"
"Footprints?" Flo looked puzzled.
"What time?"
"Early. They were there when I got back from my run at about 8-ish, maybe before. I didn't look going out."
"It wasn't me. Where did you say they were?"
"Between the garage and the side door of the house." Flo frowned.
"No, it definitely wasn't me. How odd."
She bit her lip for a moment and then said,
"Look, if you don't mind, I might just lock up now. That way we won't forget later."
"What do you mean? You think it could have been someone else? Someone from outside?" Flo's cheerful face looked suddenly uncomfortable.
"Well, my aunt had a lot of trouble when she built this place. There were a lot of planning objections. Local people didn't like the fact that it was a second home, for a start, and there were quite a few complaints about the style of the build and the site."
"Don't tell me," Tom drawled. "Native American ancient burial ground, right?"
Flo hit him with a paper towel and cracked a smile through her worry.
"Nothing like that.
The only thing buried round here are sheep, as far as I know, but this is a protected area. I'm not sure if it's actually in the national park, but it's near as makes no odds. It got through because it was extending an existing building, an old croft-type place. But people said it wasn't in the spirit of the original. Anyway, to cut a long story short, it burnt down halfway through construction, and I think it was pretty much accepted that it was arson, although nothing was ever proved. Jesus! Tom looked horrified. He glanced out of the window as though expecting to see flaming torches coming up the hill at any moment. I mean, it was fine, Flo reassured us. It was mid-build, so the place was empty, and actually it worked out really well for my aunt because the insurance was very good, so she ended up with a higher spec build. And according to the original plans, she had to keep a bit of the original croft in place, but that burnt to the ground, so it meant she didn't have to bother with that anymore. Overall, I'd say they did her a favour. But, you know, it kind of affected how she feels about the neighbours.
Are there any neighbours? Tom wanted to know.
Oh, yes. There's a little cluster of houses about a mile through the forest that way, she pointed. And a farm down the valley.
You know, I was thinking aloud, what really creeps me out isn't the footprints, or not as such. It's the fact that if it hadn't been for the snow, we'd never have known.
We looked out, contemplating the unbroken white carpet across the path to the forest. My own steps from the run that morning had been filled in, and now you would never have known a human foot had passed. For a long moment we all stood in silence, thinking about that fact, thinking about all the times we could have been observed, completely unaware.
Flo walked to the window to try the latch. It was firmly locked.
Good, she said brightly. I'm going to check the back door, and then I think we should stop all this gloomy talk and have another drink.
Hear, hear, Tom said soberly. He picked up my empty glass, and this time, when he poured me a double, I didn't complain.
Chapter 19. When I went up to change for dinner, I found Nina sitting on the bed, her head in her hands. She looked up as I came in, and her face was grey and pinched, her expression so different from her usual wry sarcasm that I did a double take. Are you all right?
Yeah.
She pushed her dark glossy hair back from her face and stood up.
I'm just... Ugh, I'm so fed up of being here. It feels like we're back in school, and I'm remembering everything I hated about myself back then. It's like we've slipped back 10 years, don't you think?
I don't know. I sat down on my own bed and pondered her words. Although I'd had very similar thoughts last night, in the light of day, they felt unfair. The Claire I remembered from school wouldn't have put up with Flo for a second, or not unless she had some powerful motive. She would have nodded along with Flo's dumber remarks, stringing her along into saying something painfully weird, at which point she would have stood back, pointed, and laughed. I'd seen none of that cruelty this weekend. Instead, I'd been impressed by her tolerance. It was clear that Flo was a damaged person in some way, and I admired Claire's compassion in trying to help her. I didn't know if I could have put up with Flo for 10 days, let alone 10 years. Claire was obviously a bigger and a better person than I'd given her credit for. I think Claire's changed a lot, actually, I said. She seems more... I stopped, searching for the right word. Maybe there wasn't one. She just seems... kinder, I guess.
People don't change, Nina said bitterly. They just get more punctilious about hiding their true selves.
I chewed my lip while I thought that over. Was it true? I had changed. At least, I told myself I had. I was far more confident, more self-sufficient. All through school, I'd relied on my friends for self-esteem and support, wanting to be one of a pack, wanting to fit in. At last, I had learned that wasn't possible, and I'd been happier, albeit more lonely, ever since. But perhaps Nina was right. Perhaps it was simply that I'd learned to hide the awkward, desperate-to-fit-in child that I had been. Perhaps the me I'd become was just a thin veneer, ready to be peeled painfully back.
I don't know, Nina said.
I just... Didn't you think lunch was painful?
Lunch had been painful. It had been exclusively wedding talk. Where the reception was to be held, what Claire was wearing, what the bridesmaids were wearing, whether smoked salmon was overdone as a starter, and why the vegetarian option always contained goat's cheese. It had been made worse by the realization that I'd crossed an invisible line and gone past the point where I could have admitted I wasn't invited. I should have said something straight away, fessed up, made a joke out of it on the first night. Now it had gone too far to look like anything other than deception, and I was trapped in a lie by omission. Claire's sympathetic glances hadn't helped.
"I'm not going to say bridezilla," Nina continued, "because actually here I think it's more like a bridesmaidzilla. But if I have to hear one more time about wedding favours or leg waxes or best man speeches, can you imagine James in the middle of all this?"
I had been purposely avoiding thinking about James and the wedding, like a sore bit of skin you can't bear to have touched. But now, as I tried, I realized that I couldn't. The James I remembered, with his head shaved at the back and a scraped-up top knot, his ripped school tie, the James who'd got drunk on his dad's whiskey and climbed on the school war memorial at midnight to shout Wilfred Owen poems to the night sky, the James who wrote Pink Floyd lyrics on the head teacher's car in lipstick on the last day of the summer term, that James, I couldn't imagine in a dinner jacket, kissing Claire's mother and laughing dutifully at the best man speech. The whole thing had been painful to the point of nausea, made worse by covert looks from Nina. If there's one thing I dislike more than being hurt, it's being seen to be hurt. I've always preferred to creep away and lick my wounds in private. But Nina was right. It wasn't a case of bridezillitis. In fact, Claire had been uncharacteristically quiet all through lunch. The conversation had been driven by Flo, egged on by Tom. At one point, Claire even suggested they change the subject. It was not likely that she had lost her love of the limelight since leaving school. More likely, she was thinking of me.
"If I had more balls, I'd have said no," Nina said glumly.
"To the wedding, I mean. But Jess would have killed me. She loves weddings. It's like some obsessive compulsive disorder with her. She's already bought a new fascinator for this one. I ask you, a fucking fascinator."
"She'd have forgiven you," I said lightly, "though you might have had to propose to make it up to her."
"It may yet come to that. Would you come?"
"Of course." I gave her a punch on the arm. "I'd even come to your hen, if you had one."
"Sod that," Nina said.
"If, and I repeat, if I ever get married, I'm having a night out clubbing and that's that. None of this prancing about in cottages in the arse end of beyond."
She sighed and dragged herself upright.
"Do you know what Flo's got sorted for us tonight?"
"What?"
"Only a fucking Ouija board. I'm telling you, if she's got one with sexy answers on the board, I'm pulling that gun down off the mantelpiece and shoving it up somewhere painful, blanks or no blanks."
"Okay, this,"
Flo said, spreading out sheets of paper on the coffee table,
"should be fun."
"Magic 8-Ball says don't count on it," Nina muttered.
Claire shot her a look, but either Flo hadn't heard or chose to ignore the dig. She carried on busily setting up the table, dotting candles among the half-empty wine bottles.
"Anyone got a lighter?"
Nina dug in the pocket of her denim miniskirt and produced a Zippo, and Flo lit the candles with an air of ceremonial reverence. As each candle on the table caught, a corresponding flame kindled in the reflected view in the window. Flo had turned off the outside security lights, and the forest was dark, apart from a little light from the moon. The room was dimly lit so that we could see the massing shapes of the trees, the pale snow, and the silhouette of the forest canopy against the slightly luminous sky. Now it looked as if little will-o'-the-wisps were dancing in the trees, fragile, ghostly flames, twice reflected in the double glazing. I walked to the window, huffing on the glass and cupping my hands to see out into the night. It was perfectly still. But I thought again of the footprints and the broken phone line, and I couldn't stop myself from surreptitiously checking the latch of the French windows. It was fastened.
Mel would have hated this, Claire said thoughtfully as I rejoined the table and Flo lit the last candle. I'm pretty sure she's even more Christian than she was at uni.
I really can't see that communing with one imaginary friend is any different to communing with a bunch of them,
Nina said spikily. Look, it's her faith, all right? There's no need to be offensive.
I'm not being offensive.
You cannot, by definition, offend someone who's not here. Offense has to be taken, not just given.
If a tree falls in an empty forest, does it make a noise? Tom said with a dry smile.
He lay back on the sofa and took a long gulp of wine.
Blimey, it's years since I've done this. My aunt was very into all this communing with the spirits. I used to go round to her house after school and she'd make me do the traditional Ouija board, you know, the one with the letters on it.
I knew what he meant. Those were the kind of Ouija boards I'd seen in films. The one Flo was setting up was a bit different, more like a biro on wheels.
It's easier this way, Flo said, her tongue between her teeth as she tried to fix the pen in the holder. I've tried it before, and the problem with the pointer is that unless you're very quick, you can miss loads of letters. This way, there's a permanent record.
Did you get anything? Claire asked. When you tried it before, I mean.
Flo nodded seriously.
Oh, yes.
I usually get some kind of message. My mum says I've got a natural resonance with the beyond.
Uh-huh,
Nina said. Her face was deadpan, but I could tell some kind of sarcastic remark was building up.
What did it say?
I put in hastily, trying to head her off at the pass.
Last time, I mean. It was about my grandfather, Flo said. He wanted to tell Granny that he was happy and that she should remarry if she wanted.
Anyway, there, all set up. Are we ready?
As ready as I'll ever be,
Claire said. She downed the rest of her wine and set down her glass.
Right, what do we do?
Flo motioned to us all to come closer.
Right. Put your fingers on the planchette. Just gently.
You're not trying to guide it. Just be the conduit for any impulses you receive from the beyond. Nina rolled her eyes, but put her fingertips on the planchette. Tom and I followed suit. Claire was the last.
Ready?
Flo asked.
Ready, Claire said.
Flo took a deep breath and shut her eyes. Her face in the candlelight was glowing, as if lit from within. I saw her eyes move beneath her lids, darting from side to side, seeking something she could not see.
Is there a spirit there who wants to speak to us?
She intoned. The planchette swirled uneasily in loops and spirals, not forming any shapes that made sense. No one was pushing it, I was pretty sure.
Is there a spirit here tonight?
Flo repeated seriously. I saw Nina hide a smile. The planchette began to move in a more purposeful way. Why?
Oh, wow, Flo breathed.
She looked up, her face alight.
Did you see that? It was like it was being pulled by a magnet. Did everyone feel that?
I had felt something. It felt more like it was being pushed by someone else in the circle, but I said nothing.
What is the name of the spirit?
Flo said eagerly. The planchette began to move again.
Te.
Qui.
Long pause.
Te.
Qui.
Qui means who in French,
Flo breathed.
Maybe we've got a French spirit guide.
L. Both Tom and Nina began to laugh as the last A trailed out from beneath the planchette. Even Claire gave a smothered snort, and the planchette veered off towards the edge of the paper and then clattered to the floor as we all began to giggle. Flo looked at the page for a moment, frowning, not getting the joke. Then she saw it. She knelt back from the table, her arms crossed.
Right.
She looked from Claire to Tom and then to me. I tried to straighten my face.
Who did that? This is not a joke. I mean, yes, it's a bit of fun, but we're never going to find anything out if you keep playing around. Tom?
It wasn't me.
Tom threw up his hands. Nina was wearing her most innocent expression, and I strongly suspected it had been her.
Well, whoever it was... Flo's face was pink and annoyed. I'm not impressed. I've gone to a lot of trouble and you're ruining...
Hey, Flops. Claire put out a hand. Chill, okay? It was just a joke. They won't do it again, will you?
She looked sternly round the circle of faces. We all put on our most contrite expressions.
All right, Flo said sulkily. But last chance. If you mess around again, I'm putting this away and we'll all play Trivial Pursuit.
What a threat, Tom said seriously, though the corner of his mouth was twitching. I promise I, for one, will behave like an angel. Don't threaten me with the pink camembert.
Okay, Flo said. She drew a deep breath and waited as we all rested our fingers on the planchette again.
It twitched, and I saw Nina's shoulders were still shaking with suppressed giggles, but she bit her lip and subsided with an effort as Claire stared at her.
We are sorry for the levity of some of our circle, Flo said meaningfully. Is there a spirit here who would like to speak to us?
This time the planchette moved more slowly, more as if it were drifting of its own accord, but unmistakably it was forming another Y, and then it stopped.
Are you a friend of someone here? Flo breathed.
Question mark, said the planchette. This time I didn't think anyone else was pushing, and I could see the others felt the same way. They had stopped laughing. Claire even looked slightly uneasy.
Do you know, Flops, I'm not sure, she said.
Tom patted her hand. It's fine, darling. It's not really spirits, just the subconscious of the group making words. Sometimes the results are quite illuminating.
Who is here?
Flo had shut her eyes. Her fingers rested very lightly on the planchette. If anyone were controlling it, I was sure it wasn't her. The planchette moved again, forming letters in a looping, free-form hand. Tom read them aloud as they appeared.
M? A, maybe? Or was that N? X? W? E? L? L. Okay, well, that's a word. Maxwell. Anyone know a Maxwell?
We all shook our heads.
Maybe it's the spirit of one of the former Crofters, Nina said seriously, come to warn us against trampling on their sacred sheep bones.
Maybe,
Flo said. She opened her eyes. They were wide and green in the darkness. She looked very pale, her pink crossness of before quite gone. She closed them again and said in a hushed, reverent tone,
Is there anyone here you wish to speak to, Maxwell?
Why?
Do you have a message for one of the group?
Why?
Who of the group?
F. F. L. F.
Me?
Flo's eyes flew open. She looked startled to the point of alarm. In fact, she looked like she was regretting this idea already.
Do you have a message for me?
Why? Flo gulped. I saw that her free hand was gripping the edge of the coffee table so hard her knuckles were white.
Okay,
she said bravely, but the planchette was already moving.
B. U.
It traced slowly, and then, in a sudden skittering rush, why coffee? There was a moment's silence, and then Nina broke it with a short, barking laugh.
Fuck off!
Flo shouted. We all jumped, and I realized it was the first time I could remember her swearing. She leapt up and sent the planchette skittering across the table. Wine glasses and candles crashed to the floor, spattering wax on the carpet.
Who was that? This isn't a joke, guys. I am fed up. Nina? Tom?
It wasn't me, Nina said, but she was laughing so hard there were tears coming from her eyes.
Tom was trying harder to hide his mirth, but he was snickering too behind his hand.
"I'm sorry," he said, trying hopelessly to straighten his expression. "I'm sorry. It's not..."
But he couldn't complete the sentence. Flo swung accusingly round at me. I was dabbing up wine from the rug.
"You're very quiet, Lee, sitting there pretending butter wouldn't melt."
"What?" I looked up, genuinely surprised.
"I beg your pardon? You heard me. I'm fed up of you sitting there like a malignant little mouse laughing behind my back."
"I'm not," I said uncomfortably, remembering the way I had succumbed to laughing at Nina's teasing when we first arrived.
"I mean, I didn't mean..." "You all think you're so perfect."
Flo was breathing heavily in huge, sobbing gasps. I thought she was about to burst into tears.
"You all think you're so great with your degrees and your jobs and your flats in London."
"Flo," Claire said. She put her hand on Flo's arm again, but Flo shook it off.
"Come on," Tom said soothingly. "Look, I don't know who did that, but I promise it's the last time anyone will mess around, right?"
He looked around the group.
"Right, everyone? We promise, okay? This time it's for real."
He was trying to help, but I felt my stomach twist uncomfortably. We should have packed up when Flo blew up the first time. Pushing on like this was asking for trouble, with Flo in her furious, heightened state.
"Don't you think..." I said nervously. "I think you should just shut up,"
Flo said furiously, imitating my stutter with an uncanny precision. I was so shocked I didn't say anything, just sat with my mouth open, staring at her. It was as if a Teletubby had spat in my face.
"Hey, come on now," Claire said. "One more chance, okay, Flops? And I promise everyone will take it seriously this time. They'll have me to answer to, if not."
Flo downed her glass of wine with a hand that shook. Then she sat heavily down at the table and put her hand on the planchette.
"Last chance," she said savagely.
Everyone nodded, and reluctantly I put my fingers back on the board.
"Let's ask it a question this time," Tom said soothingly. "Help keep it on track. How about, will Claire and James have a long and happy life?"
"No,"
Claire said loudly. We all turned, shocked by the vehemence of her response.
"No, look, I don't want to start dragging James into this, okay? It feels wrong. This is a bit of fun, but I don't want some pen telling me I'll be divorced before the age of 30.
"All right,"
Tom said mildly, but I felt his surprise.
"How about me, then? What wedding anniversary will Bruce and I celebrate?"
We all rested our fingertips on the board, and very slowly, I felt it begin to move. This time it was quite different to before. Not the stuttering push and tug, but a long, languid, flowing script that looped in spirals around the page.
P. A. P. A.
Flo spelled out.
"Papa, what does that mean? That's not a wedding anniversary."
"Paper, maybe?"
Tom was frowning at the sheet.
"That makes no sense, though. Paper's, like, year two or something. We celebrated that last year. Maybe it means opal. That first P could be an O."
"Maybe it's telling us its name,"
Flo said breathlessly. Her rage of a moment before was gone, and she looked excited, almost hyper with it. She refilled and then drained her glass with three reckless gulps and then set it unsteadily back on the floor. I saw that her silvery grey top, the twin of the one Claire was wearing, had a red wine stain down one sleeve.
"They don't always perform to order, you know. Let's ask it. What is your name, Spirit?"
The pen started again, looping swiftly over the page in large, quickly formed letters that ate up the space, scribbling over the other writing from before. "P-A," I saw, and then "B-Y" further across the page. Then it slowed to a halt, and Flo craned her head to read out the text.
Papa Begbie.
Wow. Who on earth is that? She looked around the circle of shrugging shoulders and shaking heads.
Nora? Flo said suddenly. Do you know who that is?
Christ, no, I said reflexively. To tell the truth, I was more than a little creeped out. The other stuff had been fairly obvious joking around. This felt distinctly odd. The others looked as unnerved as I felt. Claire was chewing the end of a piece of hair. Nina was looking elaborately unconcerned, but I could see her fingers playing with her lighter in her pocket, nervously twisting it around beneath the cloth.
Tom looked frankly shocked, his face pale even in the dim light.
Only Flo looked genuinely thrilled.
Wow! She breathed. A real spirit. Papa Begbie. Maybe he's the guy who owned this croft. Papa Begbie. She spoke respectfully into the space above our heads. Papa Begbie, do you have a message for us here tonight?
The pen started moving again, more jerkily this time. M? I read. For a moment my heart sank. Not more jokes about coffee. M. 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 The script went faster and faster, and then there was a sudden crunch, and the planchette grated to a juddering halt. Claire lifted it up and put her hand to her mouth.
Oh, Flops, I'm so sorry.
I looked down at the table. The biro had gone clean through the page and into the polished wood beneath.
Your aunt...
Oh, never mind, Flo said impatiently. She pushed the planchette away and lifted up the sheet.
What does it say?
We all looked, reading over her shoulder, as she turned the page slowly this way and that, reading the curving spiral of writing. M. M.
Murderer. Oh, my God.
Tom put his hand to his mouth.
That's not funny, Nina said.
Her face was pale and she took a step back from the group, scanning our faces.
Who wrote that?
Look, Tom said. Hands up, I did the coffee one, but I didn't say that. I wouldn't.
We all looked at each other, searching for guilt in each other's eyes.
Maybe you're barking up the wrong tree, Flo said.
Her flush was back, but this time I thought it had an edge of triumph. Rather than anger.
Maybe it was a real message. After all, I know some things about you. About you all.
What do you mean?
Tom said. His voice was wary.
Claire, what's she on about?
Claire said nothing, just shook her head. Her face was quite white, her lips bloodless beneath the gloss. I found I was breathing hard and fast, almost hyperventilating.
Hey,
Nina said suddenly. Her voice had an odd, far-away quality.
Hey, Nora, are you okay?
I'm fine,
I said, or tried to say. I wasn't sure if the words came out. The room seemed to be closing in even as the great glass window opened out like a mouthful of pointed, piney teeth waiting to swallow us all. I felt hands grabbing at my arms, pushing me down on the sofa, my head between my knees.
You're all right,
I heard Nina's firm voice, and suddenly it was easy to remember that she was a doctor, a professional medic, and not just a friend that I went drinking with every few months.
You're all right. Someone get a bag, a paper bag.
Drama queen,
I heard Flo say in an angry hiss, and she stomped out of the room.
I'm fine,
I said. I tried to sit up, pushing away Nina's hands.
I don't need a paper bag. I'm okay.
You sure?
Nina stared into my face searchingly. I nodded, trying to look convincing.
I'm absolutely fine. Sorry. I don't know why I came over so funny. Too much wine, but I'm all right. I promise.
Too much drama,
Tom said under his breath. But he said it soberly, and I knew he didn't mean me.
I think I'll go and get some fresh air. It's too hot in here.
It was hot. The stove was pumping out heat like a furnace. Nina nodded.
I'll come with you.
No!
I said more violently than I meant. and then, more calmly, "Honestly, I'd rather be by myself. I just want a breather, okay?" Outside, I stood with my back against the sliding glass doors of the kitchen. The sky above was deep blue velvet, and the moon was astonishingly white, ringed with a pale halo of frost. I felt the cold night air envelop me, the chill cooling my hot face and sweaty palms. I stood, listening to the pounding of my own heart, trying to slow its beats, trying to calm down. It was absurd to be so ridiculously panicked. There was nothing to say the message was about me, though what was it Flo had said at the end? "I know some things about you." What had she meant? Which one of us was she talking to? If it was me, there was only one thing she could have been referring to, and Claire was the only person who knew what had happened. Had she told Flo? I wasn't sure. I wanted to think not. I tried to remember all the secrets I confided to Claire over the years, secrets she'd kept faithfully. But I remembered going back to school to sit my French comprehension exam, and one of the other girls in the queue putting a hand on my arm. "I'm so sorry," she said. "You're so brave." And there was genuine pity in her face, but also a kind of glee, the sort you see sometimes when teens are interviewed about the tragic death of a friend. The sadness is there, and it's real, but there's an underlying thrill at the drama of it all, the realness of it all. I didn't know for sure what she meant. She might have been talking about me and James breaking up, but her reaction seemed extreme for that, and I began to wonder if Claire had told someone what had happened. All through the exam I worried, and worried at the question, and by the time the 2 hours was up I knew what I had to do, because I knew that the doubt would send me insane. I never went back. Now, I shut my eyes, feeling the cold on my face and the snow penetrating my thin socks, and listening to the soft sounds of the night, the crackle and rush of snow-laden branches breaking beneath their weight, the hoot of an owl, the strange, haunting shriek of a fox. I had never lived in the country. I'd grown up on the outskirts of Reading and then moved to London as soon as I turned 18. I'd lived there ever since. But I could imagine living here, in the silence and the solitude, only seeing people when you wanted to. I wouldn't live in a vast glass bell jar, though. I'd live somewhere small, inconspicuous, part of the landscape. I thought of the crofter's cottage that had once stood here, before it had been burned to the ground. I imagined a long, low building, its silhouette like an animal trying to go to ground, like a hare flattening its form into the grasses. I could have lived there, I thought. When I opened my eyes, the light blazing from the house onto the snow hurt my retinas. It was so brash, so wasteful, like a golden lighthouse beaming its presence into the darkness. Only a lighthouse was to tell ships to keep away. This place felt more like a beacon, like a lantern drawing in the moths. I shivered. I must stop being so superstitious. This was a beautiful house. We were lucky to be staying here, even for just a few days. But I did not like it. I didn't trust Flo, and I couldn't wait to be away tomorrow morning. I wondered how early I could decently leave. Nina and I had seats on the 5 p.m. train, but my ticket was flexible. "Are you okay?" The voice came from behind me, followed by a long exhalation of cigarette smoke, and I turned and saw Nina standing there, fag in one hand, the other arm wrapped around her ribs against the cold.
"Sorry. I know you said you wanted to be alone. I needed a fag. Needed to get away. Ugh, that Flo. She gives me the heebie-jeebies. What was all that weird stuff about knowing secrets about us?"
"I don't know," I said uncomfortably.
"It was probably just bullshit,"
Nina dragged on her fag. "But I must admit, I was sitting there ticking off all the stuff I've told Claire over the years, and it wasn't a very comfortable feeling, thinking about what she might have passed on to Flo. And Tom looked pretty shaken up, didn't he? Wonder what the skeleton in his closet is." "I don't know," I repeated. The cold was starting to strike through to my bones, and I shivered.
I think Melanie had it right, Nina said at last. Flo's not normal, and her weirdness about Claire not healthy is an understatement. All that copying Claire's clothes, it's a bit single white female, isn't it? If you ask me, she's a couple of Xanax away from reenacting the shower scene in Psycho.
Oh, for God's sake, I snapped.
Flo was odd, but that was really not fair.
She's not psycho, she's just not very confident. I know what it's like, always feeling second best. Claire's not always the easiest person to be friends with.
No, no, don't try to make excuses for her, Nora. The clothes and stuff, I mean, whatever, it's weird. But if Claire wants to put up with it, it's her call. But that little exhibition tonight was directed squarely at us, and I'm not having it.
Look, I was thinking, tomorrow, I know we're booked on the 5 p.m, but
can we go early? I was thinking the exact same thing. I've had it up to here, to be honest.
If I was sober, I'd go tonight, but I'm in no state to drive.
What do you reckon, straight after breakfast?
Flo will flip, I said soberly.
There were more activities planned for tomorrow. I wasn't sure what, but the instructions had been clear. Leave at 2 p.m, not before.
I know. I was actually thinking...
Nina took a long drag.
I was thinking we could just slip away.
Is that cowardly?
Yes, I said definitely.
Very.
Oh, all right.
She sighed, exhaling a cloud of smoke, white in the moonlight.
Maybe I can invent some sort of hospital crisis. I'll think of an excuse tonight.
How would you know? I said, given there's no mobile reception and no phone.
Well, that's another fucking thing, isn't it? Supposing the crazed locals do come up the hill, banjos playing, pikes alight, what the hell are we supposed to do? Throw snowballs at them?
Don't be so melodramatic.
There aren't any crazed locals. Flo's aunt probably torched the place herself as an insurance job and blamed it on the farmers.
I hope you're right. I've seen Deliverance.
I'm happy for you, but back to the problem in hand.
Oh, I'll just pretend a stray text got through overnight. Anyway, even if Flo doesn't believe me, what can she say?
Plenty was my guess, but unless she barricaded the door, I didn't think it would work to deflect Nina.
There was a long silence, Nina blowing smoke rings with her cigarette into the still night air, me huffing out clouds of white breath.
What happened back there?
Nina asked at last.
That little panic attack, I mean. Was it the message?
Sort of.
But you didn't think it was about you, did you?
She looked at me sideways, curiously, and blew out a smoke ring.
I mean, what could you have possibly done to kill someone?
I shrugged. No, not really. Anyway, it might not have been murderer. It could have been murder. There were so many repeats, I'm not sure what the word actually was.
What, like a warning, you mean?
Nina asked.
So we're back to the crazed locals, are we?
I shrugged again.
I'm not going to lie. She puffed out another ring. I thought maybe it was directed at me. I mean, I've never killed anyone purposely, but there's people who've died because of mistakes I made, for sure.
What, you thought it was a genuine message?
Nah.
She took another drag. I don't believe in any of that kind of thing.
I just meant I thought someone was taking a stab in the dark, trying to wind me up. It was definitely Flo, no question. I think she was pissed off because we were messing around at the beginning and decided to punish us. I did that tequila message. She probably knew.
Do you think? I looked up at the clear sky. It was not black, but deep navy blue. A colour so pure it made my eyes hurt. Far up, a satellite was travelling towards the moon. I tried to remember back, to Flo's face as she read out the word, to her closed eyes and rapturous expression. I don't know. I've been standing out here trying to think it out, but I'm not sure it was her. She looked genuinely shocked. And she was the only person who really believed in the whole thing. I don't think she'd have messed with the spirits by pushing it.
So now you reckon it was real?
There was skepticism in Nina's voice. I shook my head. No, I didn't mean that. I think someone was pushing it. I'm just not sure it was her.
So what, that leaves Tom and Claire?
Nina dropped her cigarette and ground it out in the snow with a hiss.
Really?
I know. That's partly what upset me. I think it was... I stopped, trying to disentangle my unease at the whole thing. It wasn't the message. It was the spite. Whatever you think, whoever you think did that, human or not, it was a horrible thing to say. Someone in that room wanted to fuck with our heads.
And they did.
We both turned to look back at the house. Through the window, I could see Claire moving around the living room, rounding up glasses and picking nuts out of the carpet. Tom was nowhere to be seen. I guessed he had gone up. Flo was loading the dishwasher in the kitchen with a nervous, savage energy, crashing the glasses in so hard I was surprised they didn't break. I didn't want to go back in. For a second, in spite of the snow, in spite of the sub-zero temperatures that were already making me shiver, I was seriously tempted to borrow Nina's keys and sleep in the car.
"Come on," Nina said at last. "We can't stay out here all night. Let's go back in, say goodnight, and head straight up. Then first thing in the morning, we're out of here. Right?"
"All right." I followed her back through the kitchen door and closed it behind us.
"Lock it, please,"
Flo said shortly. She looked up from the dishwasher. Her face was bleary, her mascara halfway down her cheeks, her hair straggling across her face.
"Flo, leave it," Nina said.
"Please, I promise we'll help in the morning."
"It's fine," Flo said tightly. "I don't need any help."
"All right," Nina threw up her hands.
"You said it. See you at breakfast."
She turned and then muttered,
"Fucking Martha,"
as she left the room.
Chapter 20. Nina fell asleep almost instantly and lay there sprawled out like a tanned daddy longlegs, snoring away. I lay awake, trying to go to sleep, but instead I was thinking about the evening and the strange little group Claire had gathered around her this weekend. I wanted to leave so badly it hurt. To be back at home, in my own bed, with my own things, in the blissful peace and quiet. Now I was counting down the hours and listening to Nina's soft snores, and behind that, to the silence of the house and the forest. Not quite silence, though. As I was drifting off, there came a quiet creak, and then a bang. Not a loud one, just as if a door was banging in the wind. I was almost drowsing when it came again, a long, slow eek, and then a staccato clack. The odd thing was, it sounded like it was inside the house. I sat up, holding my breath, trying to hear the noise above Nina's snores. Eek, clack. This time there was no doubt. The sound was certainly not coming from outside the window, but floating up the stairwell. I got up, grabbed my dressing gown, and tiptoed to the door. When I opened it, I almost screamed. A ghost-like figure was standing on the landing, bending over the banisters. I didn't scream, but I must have made some kind of choked gasp, because the figure turned and put her finger to her lips. It was Flo, dressed in a white nightgown with pink flowers, bleached pale in the moonlight.
"You heard it too," I whispered.
She nodded.
"Yes, I thought it might be a gate in the garden, but it's not. It's inside the house."
There was a creak behind us, and we both turned to see Claire coming out of the bedroom, rubbing her eyes.
"What is it?"
"Shh," Flo whispered.
"There's something downstairs. Listen."
We all paused. Clack.
"It's just a door in the wind,"
Claire said, yawning. Flo shook her head vehemently.
"It's inside the house. What wind could there be inside the house? Someone must have left a door open."
"Impossible," Claire said. "I checked them all."
Flo put her hands over her throat, looking suddenly frightened.
We've got to go down, haven't we?
Let's wake Tom, Claire said. He looks tall and menacing.
She tiptoed into his room and I heard her whispering.
Tom! Tom! There's a noise in the house.
He came out, bleary-eyed and pale, and we all crept slowly down the stairs. There was a door open. You could tell it as soon as we reached the ground floor. It was cold as ice, and a breeze was blowing through the hallway coming from the kitchen. Flo turned completely pale.
I'm getting the gun, she whispered,
her voice so slight you could hardly hear.
I thought you said, Claire mouthed, that it was loaded with blanks.
It is, Flo whispered crossly. But he won't know that, will he?
She jerked her head at the living room door.
You first, Tom.
Me?
Tom said in a horrified whisper, but he rolled his eyes and edged his head very quietly around the door. Then he beckoned silently, and we all followed him in a sort of relieved rush. The room was empty, moonlight flooding the pale carpet. Flo reached up above the mantelpiece and took down the gun. Her face was pale, but determined.
You're sure about the blanks?
Claire asked again.
Completely sure. But if someone's there, it'll give them a pretty good scare.
If you're holding the gun, I'm going behind you, Tom hissed. Blanks or no blanks.
All right.
Whatever I'd thought of Flo, I couldn't fault her courage. She stood for a moment in the hallway, and I could see her hands shaking. Then she took a deep, shuddering breath and flung open the kitchen door so hard it crashed back against the tiled wall. There was no one there. But the glass kitchen door was standing open in the moonlight, and a light dusting of snow blew across the tiled floor. Claire was across the room in a moment, her bare feet soft on the cold tiles.
There's footsteps, look,
she pointed out across the lawn, big, shapeless prints, like those made by wellies or snow boots.
Fuck.
Tom's face was pale.
What happened?
He turned to me.
You were out of that door last. Didn't you lock it?
I'm sure I did.
I tried to remember. Nina offering to help, Flo's angry crashing. I had a clear memory of my hand on the lock.
I did. I'm certain I locked it.
Well, you can't have done it properly.
Flo rounded on me. In the moonlight dark, she looked like a statue, her face as hard and unyielding as marble.
I did.
I was beginning to feel angry.
Anyway, I thought you said Claire checked.
I just rattled each door,
Claire said. Her eyes were huge, with shadows like bruises in the sockets.
I didn't check every lock. If it didn't open, I assumed it was shut.
I locked it, I said stubbornly.
Flo made a small, furious noise, almost like a growl. Then she tucked the shotgun under her arm and stalked upstairs.
I locked it,
I repeated, looking from Claire to Tom.
Don't you believe me?
Look,
Claire said.
It's no one's fault.
She walked across to the door and slammed it hard, twisting the key as she did.
It's damn well locked now, anyway. Let's get up to bed.
We trooped back up the stairs, feeling the spent adrenaline in our systems fading to sour jitters. Nina was at the top of the stairs as I rounded the landing, scrubbing her eyes confusedly.
What happened?
She asked as I drew level.
Why did I just see Flo stamp past holding that fucking shotgun?
We had a scare, Tom said shortly, coming up from behind me.
Someone,
he glanced at me,
left the kitchen door unlocked.
It wasn't me, I said doggedly.
Well, whatever. It was open. We heard it banging. There were footprints outside.
Bloody hell.
Nina was as wide awake as the rest of us now. She passed a hand over her face again, rubbing the sleep out of her eyes.
Had they gone? Was anything missing?
Nothing I noticed.
Tom looked at me and Claire.
Anything you can think of? Telly was there. All the obvious stuff like that. Did anyone leave their wallets lying around? Mine's in my room.
Mine too,
Claire said. She turned and glanced out at the drive.
And all the cars are still there.
My bag's in my room, I think, I said,
I put my head round the door to check. Yep, it's there.